Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs.
And I am Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks.
So we're here today to talk about Kyle Korver, the in and outs for both teams with the Kyle Korver going to the Cleveland Cavaliers. If you don't already know, that is a deal where Korver goes to Cleveland. The Cavs are sending a 2019 first-round pick, Mike Dunleavy's and his contract, and Mo Williams, and basically Mo Williams' contract, because Mo Williams has been in chillin' Alabama all season. And for me, Brad, before we kind of get into this, I was a little bit surprised that this has happened. It hadn't been discussed of him at least being the guy that was going to be traded out of Atlanta, at least first. And I was not really expecting the Cavs to be a team that would be able to get a guy from the Hawks. And it's just kind of, this was kind of a surprise when this came through.
Yeah, I was surprised by the timing more than anything. You know, it's still fairly early. There's always been rumblings over the last, at least a couple weeks, if not months, that the Hawks could be looking to do something like this with Korver and maybe Tabo Cephalosha in a similar vein. And these two guys are veteran guys, free agents to be. So the Hawks probably not going to win the title this year. I think we could probably all agree on that. So moving on from one of those guys is not a big shock to me, but the fact that it was Cleveland was certainly a surprise. Just how close and how fast it came together was definitely a surprising thing, especially in there's that time period in which nobody knew what the return was going to be. It was sort of just broken as, Kyle Korver to the Cavs and kind of speculating and trying to figure out what Cleveland could have done to make that deal happen. I was actually kind of okay with the return. I think I might be in the minority in terms of Hawks people, but I thought getting a first rounder of any kind for Kyle was a win in my view. But I know it's probably not going to be a good pick. Cleveland is going to be good for as long as LeBron is LeBron, which, 2019, you assume that he'll probably take a slight step back at that point, but still, it's a pretty safe bet that Cleveland's going to be a good basketball team in a couple of years. So not the most intriguing pick in the world, but for a guy in Korver that's going to be a rental, a pure rental, you'd imagine on this trade, that's a reasonable return, I think. And it was definitely surprising. I wasn't shocked that he got traded. It was just more of when it happened and where he's going.
Yeah, and we're going to get into, I think, what this means for Atlanta and for the Cavs in a little bit, but let's start with Korver as a person here. For him, I imagine, I just saw the pictures and video of him on the bench during that last game, and he looked very solemn, and I think all the quotes that we saw from guys like him and Kent Bazemore, and even Dwight Howard had kind of an interesting quote about this, and Millsap as well, who, of course, is also in trade talks. This is a big change for Korver. Atlanta has been the place I think he's going to be most associated with when he retires. Like, of course, Chicago and Utah, and he started with the Sixers, and if the Cavs, he helps the Cavs win a title, he gets his name mentioned there. But he's going to be best known for being a part of those really good Hawks teams for a couple of years, being an all-star the 1 year. And he seemed very connected with the community. Like, I was thinking about this as I saw this on Twitter. His church, because he's a pretty religious guy, from my understanding, tweeted, like, we're going to miss you, Kyle, and he's not going to be there. And, like, this is a big mid-season adjustment for him. And I don't know how much you know, but wouldn't know about this exactly. But I imagine this is kind of going to be kind of a transition for him. Not so much on the court, because I think that's going to work really well. But off the court, I think it's going to be a big change.
Yeah, I mean, I won't claim to know a ton about Kyle off the floor other than what you can see in the public. But, you know, dealing with him in this, as someone in the media, I've always enjoyed Kyle. I think he's a smart, thoughtful guy who's always been gracious to me personally and to the media that I've always seen. So he's definitely a good guy. It's not a surprise to me that you would imagine people are going to be upset that he's leaving, that he's going to be upset. It wasn't as if he's it was just a weird spot. You know, he spent that entire game on the bench that you're referencing against the Pelicans in this limbo state where he already knew he was going to get traded, but it wasn't official. So he had to go out there and sit with the team. He was, he's a pro. He was up and cheering during the fourth quarter as the Hawks kind of made the push to win that game. But afterwards, you could tell he was emotional. Mike Budenholzer has been emotional and talking about Korver. He's definitely a fan favorite in the community. He has done a lot of charitable work around. He has a couple of financial things. You mentioned his church thing, which I'm not really, you know, super familiar with, but doesn't surprise me with Kyle. So, yeah, it's definitely a weird thing. And you know, he mentioned even specifically that, you know, all of his kids were born in Atlanta during this time. I think we often overlook the personal stuff with these guys. They do make a lot of money, but these guys are still people with families and things that go on. So I kind of referenced that watching him sitting on the bench during that game. And, you know, how awkward would that be for both him and his teammates, just knowing that he's going to not be there anymore. But, yeah, Kyle, you could tell he was moved by it. But I'm actually happy for him that he's going to a good situation. You know, I was not going to be surprised if he got traded, but going to a good spot where he's going to be able to pursue a title is going to be fun for him. And I think he probably realizes that too. He's acknowledged that as a good thing. If you're going to get traded, you want to get traded to a good team like that. So that'll be fun from a basketball standpoint. But you never want to uproot your family, and this is sort of that business in which you kind of take that thing for granted. You talk about, I'm guilty of this too, talking about guys getting traded and how that's the right move for a certain team. But you have to think beyond that if you're the player and you have a family, and that's definitely the case for Kyle. So mixed emotions there, especially for people that cover him on a daily basis. And I know a lot of fans are wishing him the best, even though, you know, a lot of Hawks fans don't have the fondest thoughts about the Cavs. But it's going to be weird to root for Kyle, but also not rooting for the Cavs for a lot of people. But I'm just hoping that he's going to have success, because he's been a great guy in my experience.
Yeah, everything I've ever read or heard about him, he's just the nicest guy. And I think, like, you're right. I think you're remembering that these guys are people. This is a big, like, this is a thing. I mean, like you said, he's leaving the city where his kids were born. Like, that's a big thing. He's made a home there. And that's, like, a big change. And, like, yes, like, it's probably very exciting to know that you're going to have a chance to play for a title, and you're going to get to play with LeBron James, and you're going to just kind of get put in a really good situation and, you know, really have probably the best chance he's ever had to win a title. It's just...
I mean,
the Hawks a couple years ago were so good, and he was such a big part of it. But, like, off the court, that's a big change. And I think for the Hawks, too, this is, I mean, as an outsider for this, this is, to me, was the signal that this is the end of that era. Like, Horford's obviously been gone. Damari was gone at the season after. They had the Player of the Month award with all five of them. This, to me, was the sign that this is the end fully of those Hawks teams. I mean, obviously, Teague's gone as well, but this was one of the last guys. And if you're trading Kyle Korver, it's probably clear that maybe Paul Millsap's on the way out too. And that, to me, is someone who just loved actually watching those Hawks teams, because they played such an interesting style. It was cool to see. It was honestly cool to see a team without a superstar, like without a high, like a Durant or a Curry or a LeBron. Like, all really good players. And they just played, like, really good team basketball and all this stuff. And it was fun to see those guys. And it kind of sucks that, like, that's the end of those guys. And that's kind of how we're going to remember the end of that. It's Kyle Korver sitting on the bench, knowing he's traded, and knowing that. And Paul Millsap kind of probably thinking, okay, maybe I'm next.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. That was that 61 season was my second year covering the team with a credential. So kind of got a little bit spoiled by how fun that team was, just even to watch on a daily basis. Like, you know, I never really tripped myself into thinking that they were actually going to win the title, but they were super fun. You know, having you mentioned the Player of the Month thing. They were undefeated in that entire month. They went 17-0 for a month. Just kind of ridiculous how much fun and cool they were to watch. And just as a basketball diehard and sort of a purist, the way they played, how unselfish they were, etc. You know, guys can just be not having that singular force was the problem. problem in the end for them, for sure. At least one of the problems, but the way they played just so freely and not worried about who was shooting the ball, et cetera, was a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do now. I will not be blown away if they don't trade Millsap. I'm still trying to kind of hold on to that and present that option, because everybody, you know, justifiably is jumping to the fact that, you know, the Hawks are rebuilding. It's official. And like, I think that's the most likely scenario now, is that this is the first domino of many. But the Hawks have been super frugal in terms of being willing to rebuild. And there's a lot of rebuild dynamics in Atlanta that we can not get into here, because it'll be too long of a conversation. Yeah. why the team wouldn't rebuild or would. But, you know, they've now won six in a row as we record this as well, which could be another wrinkle in that. This would not be my favorite thing in the world, but they might be able to talk themselves into not selling if they are playing well enough not to do that. I would root against that if I'm a Hawks fan, which is a weird thing to say. You don't want to root for your team to lose, but at the same time, yeah, they have a lot of decisions to make, and I think it's the most likely scenario now is that they go ahead with something of a rebuild, not a full-on tank job, but definitely not the same, you know, forward-thinking, hopefully, you know, thinking in the moment is going to be a little bit down the line versus the future. The future is going to be definitely more important in the next couple of months, and that would definitely be a change based on that. You know, they signed Dwight Howard and Kent Bazemore to big contracts in July. Neither one of those guys are rebuilding things, so sort of a pretty quick sea change, and it's going to be interesting to see if they follow through with it.
Yeah, because you do have guys that could be part of a rebuild, right? Like Schroeder. You pick Schroeder because he's younger than Teague, partially. Like, obviously, I think Budenholzer loves that guy, and I think you and I have actually talked about this specifically, but like, you pick him because he's younger. You have some guys I really like, and Prince, and I mean, and it's not like Bazemore is exactly old either. The Howard thing's interesting because this is a tangent that we don't need to go all the way down, but I think this is the first time Dwight Howard has been in a situation where the team wasn't really asking him to be on a really good team and contend. Like, he's always been a building block player with the Magic, and then with the Lakers, and then with the Rockets. And to an extent, when he got signed with the Hawks, that changed. But this is like the first time he hasn't been in that building block trying to win situation. It's like a different vibe for him, and that's kind of interesting in itself. But I think right, the rebuilding stuff is complicated. I think the Millsap stuff's really interesting because I could see teams getting into a bidding war for him. And we've seen a lot of teams mention in those deals, certain teams have good assets, certain teams don't. But I feel like you could get good young players and a couple guys that aren't exactly old but aren't exactly 22 either. I think you could get a lot of good stuff for this. And I wonder, what would it take for Atlanta to actually fully move on from Millsap? Like, what would you be happy with?
Yeah, I mean, there was some reporting, I believe, over the weekend that was indicating that the Hawks were looking for a quote-unquote quality first-round asset, whatever that means, whatever quality definition you want to put on that. I think, you know, a combination of picks and young players would be the optimal return. Your point is valid in that the best way for the Hawks to create demand for him is to get multiple teams going in this thing, which we've seen and heard teams involved. You mentioned there's a few of them that don't really have a lot of assets. I think about the Pelicans, for instance, are a team that's been rumored to be in the Millsap sweepstakes, and they don't really have much to go out. Same with the Kings. Those are two teams that are, you know, you can be as interested as you want to be to trade for Paul Millsap, but you have to have something to go back the other way. Atlanta has kind of become famous for having these super high asking prices for their guys. You know, there's been tons of reporting, you know, Brian Windhorst and Zach Lowe, a couple people, Kevin Arnovitz, talked about just how high the price tags were a year ago when the Hawks were quote-unquote shopping Al Horford and Jeff Teague and Paul Millsap last year at the deadline, and that's why that those deals didn't happen, is because the Hawks were asking for too much in the minds of a lot of people. So I don't think Atlanta's asking price is going to go straight down or anything like that. I'd be happy with, you know, If you can get a good pick, then do that. I mean, I'd be okay with that. But aside from that, you're talking about the teams like the Nuggets and the Raptors. Those teams are more – it's more having these young, cost-controlled assets. Like on Toronto side, you know, Jakob Poeltl or Terrence Ross or Norman Powell or something like that. None of those guys will, you know, break anything crazy for the Atlanta Hawks, but good value guys. Whereas the same thing with Denver, with a couple of their young assets like Jusuf Nurkić or even, you know, Jamal Murray in a dreamy scenario, stuff like that. So Yeah, it's going to be a package in which the Hawks a lot of Hawks fans are going to be underwhelmed, I think, when and if this trade happens, because you think Paul Millsap, you think, you know, top 20, 25 player in the entire NBA, and that could be a high asking price. But when you're talking about a rental and the quote unquote reward is being able to pay a guy, you know, $40 million a year at the age of 32, I think the asking price is going to be a little bit lower than people will expect. But as long as they get one good asset, I would certainly do it. And if they are not able to do that for some reason, if they can go through the entire league and not get a good asset for Paul, then, you know, keep him and see what happens.
Yeah, I kind of just, in terms of just a basketball sense, I think Toronto would be the most fun. I think Denver would be interesting too. I think the Pelicans and stuff have nothing to really give them, right? Like, what are you gonna get?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's
like,
that's
you want Solomon Hill, like
Buddy Hield.
Yeah, like Buddy Hield, who, like, I wrote a piece about him for the Step Back, and I was like, oh, like he had this really good month, and I looked at their offensive rating from the start of December until the date was like January 5th, and like he had this great month, shot really well from three. They still had the worst offensive rating in the league over that span. I was just this is bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big Buddy Hield guy. We don't want to get down this tangent, but like Buddy Hield has always been a shooter. Like, they're the same age. And this is year four for Dennis Schroeder. So it's like, remind yourself that, yeah, Buddy Hield's a rookie, but he's also 23 years old. He's at least 22. I think he's 23, but one of those without having it in front of me is that, you know, that guy should be a lot better than he is if you're going to have him be a building block piece, and that pick is not looking terribly good. So, yeah, without getting down the line there, there's a lot of these teams that don't have a ton to offer that want to get in the mix, and that's fine, but the Hawks are not going to just give Paul Millsap away, because it's already going to be a PR hit for them if they end up trading him, because he's their best player. You never want to trade your best player in the middle of a season. That your fan base will never like that. But if you don't get a couple of good assets for them, they're not going to be able to take that PR hit. So keep an eye on that. That's definitely a reason for them not to do it, is if they can't get anything back for them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Is there anything else with the Hawks that you kind of think this indicates? How did does the fan base react to the Korver thing? We talked about it like a little bit, and the Cavs stuff certainly probably isn't ideal for Hawks fans, but I mean, where do they kind of see this kind of putting the franchise?
Yeah, there was a lot of the entertainment of the Cavs kind of thing, which I don't really care, honestly, as someone who covers. I'm sort of a retired Hawks fan, and then I cover the team now, so I try not to be a fan anymore of the team. But I did grow up a Hawks fan and have a rooting interest there, so I get it from some certain circumstances. You know, Cleveland is a quote unquote rival of Atlanta; they're in the same conference. But for me, if you're the Hawks, you get the best return you can. The Cavs are already a lot better than you, so it shouldn't affect your whether you want to make that trade just because you're sending them to the Cavs. But beyond that, I think a lot of Hawks fans are disappointed because they see the whole here comes the rebuild thing, and this is not a rebuilding town. They don't want to go through that. A lot of the fans like Korver. He's a fan favorite. There is a segment of the Hawks population which thinks that Korver is not a good basketball player, which kind of blows my mind, but it does exist. And a lot of those people were pretty happy to see, you know, more time for Tim Hardaway Jr. And I don't really get that mindset, but it does exist out there. But yeah, I think for the most part, people are understanding of the move. I think it's more fearful of this being a precursor to a full-scale blow-up rather than having a real problem with Korver. But a lot of people, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, getting just quote-unquote the first-round pick from Cleveland, knowing that it's going to be a bad pick. There was some of that as well. People just saying, like, look, this is going to be a bad first-round pick in 3 years. That doesn't seem like a lot, which I push back on a little bit, but I do understand it. So definitely mixed reaction, I would describe it as. You know, there's kind of some divided camps. I'm sort of in the camp where this is a pretty good return, and I was pretty happy with it. But I also understand that I'm trying to remove myself from fandom and kind of be as analytical as possible. So that's the analytical spin. We'll see what the fans say.
Yeah, I was a tad bit surprised that someone else didn't maybe give more for him, because the Cavs' offer wasn't great. And you know what I mean?
That's the weird thing about it being so early. Like, it's January. Like, they probably could have waited a little bit longer, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, the whole bidding war conversation with Millsap, they definitely didn't do that here. If they did, it was very quick. Like, it went from Korver's on the market to Korver's traded in, what, like 3 days?
Yeah, it was like this quick turnaround. For the Cavs, it came out of nowhere. We'd kind of put, as a media group and, you know, with the blog and stuff, I think people everywhere else, we kind of thought it was going to be somebody else, maybe a point guard, if that was going to be the first move or something like that. And I like that's still going to come. And maybe we thought it was going to be cutting Jordan McRae because of his contract guarantee and stuff like that. So this it did really kind of come out of there. And I kind of just, again, I just would like to know if there what other offers were. We may never know that. But if another team, another contender had something better to offer. Because Korver, I think, is probably best utilized at this point in his career as a guy on a good team shooting threes off the bench or as a spot starter and with and while still playing pretty good overall team defense. So, like, I wonder what team actually offered it. And it's probably some of the Hawks in with his agent kind of trying to put him in a place where if he was going to have to leave Atlanta, it was going to be a place where he could go play for a title.
Yeah, I actually mentioned that on my reaction podcast, I guess that ran on Friday. This is something the Hawks have a history of doing. They said the Shelvin Mack trade was a much smaller one, but one that didn't make any bit of sense whatsoever for the Hawks. But they sent Shelvin to the Utah Jazz to play for his old coach in Quinn Snyder, for instance. They've also did the same thing with Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague ended up in his hometown of Indianapolis. I'm sure the Hawks had different offers, but they have a history of doing this now where they've sent guys out in trades that were okay for them. But like you made you wonder if they could have gotten more, except for the fact that they kind of set the player back to the exact spot they probably wanted to be. So yeah, this is that could be part of it. I'm skeptical that the Hawks could have gotten a ton more than this, only because if they thought that, they probably could have waited again. And Cleveland, I'm sure, had some level of urgency because of the fact that LeBron's gone out and said he wants more players, JR's on the shelf, etc. So they need Korver now to kind of sustain. So maybe that offer would have gotten lower. I'm not sure. Maybe that was the urgency part of it, but I'm pretty skeptical, honestly, that the Hawks could have gotten more than this. Maybe the pick could have come earlier instead of waiting until 2019. People are impatient, but aside from that, getting a first rounder for Kyle Korver in a vacuum for an expiring contract, Kyle Korver at 35, feels like a win to me. It's just one of those things where there is that question of whether they could have gotten more somewhere else.
Yeah, if I was. When this happened, I was a little surprised Cedi Osman wasn't in the deal. And if you don't know who Cedi Osman is, to the listeners out there, he's the Cavs' probably best trade asset. So that kind of makes me think they did. The Cavs, for me, did a really good job on this deal, just because they still could use Osman as a pick or as an asset to get somebody else or to bring him over next year, because I think he probably could play. He wants to play in the NBA next year, and I think he's probably going to be able to do at least some things pretty well from day one. But to look at Korver as an actual player, my read on him, having watched maybe 6 or 7 Hawks games this year, is that he's obviously not Korver that's going to shoot almost 50% from three again. Like, he's not going to be that guy. But he's also a guy who's going to still shoot threes at a high level. He's going to defend decently, still as part of an overall team defensive structure. And I think what he does is going to be magnified by playing with LeBron James. Like, I think that's just kind of my read. I think he's going to be really useful with the Cavs. And does he necessarily take things over the top for them? No, but I think he's a perfect fit for what they probably needed off the bench. And I think this is a good landing spot for him if he was going to move on from Atlanta.
Yeah, it's a great spot for Kyle. I mean, a great spot for Cleveland. It's a great trade for the Cavs. I would call that a huge win. I had to write about it for Dime Magazine, from the Cavs' angle. So I broke that down a little bit, and basically my takeaway was what you just said, is that this is a great spot for Korver, and that it basically magnifies his strengths while covering up for his weaknesses. One of the big reasons why he has quote unquote regressed over the last year or so in terms of his stats in Atlanta was because the Hawks don't really have any creation around him. Dennis Schroeder is having a nice season, but he's not exactly a distributor. This is not the free-flowing offense that had them win 60 games 2 years ago. It's kind of a stagnant, much more traditional offense that has allowed other people to game plan for Korver. We saw that in both the Cavs series the last 2 years, in the playoffs even, is that Cleveland was able to game plan around stopping Kyle Korver, and Korver is not good enough to be able to create his own offense in that setting. Whereas now in Cleveland, he's going to get basically any open shot he wants. I mean, that's kind of the price you pay for when you have LeBron on the court. If you're the defense, is trying to deal with LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love and all these options. And Korver, I believe, I'm not sure if this is still true, but at least as of 2 days ago, was leading the entire NBA in terms of spot up effective field goal percentage for the season. It's like 84% on spot ups. That's effective field goal percentage. That has some stuff in there that people might not understand. But let's just say that he's a good shooter still. He's still a great shooter, I would say. And because of the fact that he's actually going to be able to get open, not have to be created for all the time, just specifically, but rather be a secondary option, that is a great fit for Kyle. And you mentioned his team defense. I think perpetually Korver is underrated defensively. He's not some defensive stopper by any means, but he's also not awful either. He's very big and physical. He has good hands. He's a good rebounder for a wing. Like, he's not going to go out and stop anybody, but he can play within a scheme, and you don't really have to hide him per se. So that's a great spot for Cleveland. And also, Korver's a guy who's not going to care if he's not playing crunch time minutes in Cleveland. There's obviously some lineups in which the Cavs won't have him on the court and when things matter, and Korver is the type of guy who's not going to care about that at all. So it's not like you're bringing in this chemistry risk in the middle of the season. Korver's going to fit right in, and until JR comes back, he'll be your designated shooter. And then when JR comes back, you kind of ride whichever hot hand you want and whichever lineup construction you want. So yeah, it's a huge win for Cleveland in my estimation. Obviously, you're closer to it than I am, but I can speak to the fact that Korver is much better when he plays with teammates that are good and can create offense, and there's nobody better than LeBron at that.
Yeah, I think you're reading that 100% right. Like, I think he fits in certain ways. I think he's also insurance for a JR, because JR is coming off something that is going to affect his hand. He's got the thumb injury on his shooting hand. That's not ideal for a guy whose job is to shoot.
JR's a better athlete. I mean, JR's a much better athlete. He's a better one-on-one defender than Korver is. So there's only so much. There's only so much that Korver can make up for. But if you're looking just pure offensively, Korver is even a better shooter than JR. So it's one of those things where if you're going to get wide open shots, if I have to pick one of those two guys to shoot a wide open three, it's going to be Korver.
Yeah, I really compared this to the Cavs getting Channing Frye, and they're obviously functionally different because Channing Frye is a big. But I think Kyle Korver is going to just get these kind of crazy open looks that he probably shouldn't be getting, like, functionally from opposing defenses, just because of LeBron, of the gravity LeBron draws. Kyrie, I know people are going to tweet me about this and say, like, oh, he's not a great passer or anything, but he's done a really, really nice job the past couple weeks of really abandoning the mid-range to an extent and dishing out of inside more. He's looking to find open shooters on the perimeter. Korver is going to be a guy that you put him with Kyrie, he's going to get open looks that way too. And I think even if you're playing with Kevin Love, and they do some stuff where Love's passing, we've seen a little bit of this. Even if it's something where Korver gets the ball and or is waiting and runs around a screen like they did with Mike Dunleavy when Mike Dunleavy's playing a little bit, he's going to get these open looks that he's just going to nail, and like he's just going to be so useful. And the defensive stuff, I think you're right. Like, do you want him necessarily playing against teams that have multiple ball handlers? Maybe not, especially because you have Shumpert and Liggins, and you can probably get by in certain situations with those guys. But if you're, if you, let's say you're playing the Warriors in the finals, and you need his shooting, you can put him on Ian Clark. You can put him on Andre Iguodala. Like, you can put him on these guys that aren't their best players and that do some stuff well, but aren't going to handle things. He's a smart defender. Like, I think you're right, he's not a lockdown defender, but he's a useful defender and he's a passable defender, and that's kind of all you need.
Yeah, I mean, he's playable in that series. That's one of the first things people ask me from the Cleveland side is, can Korver get on the court against Golden State? And I said yes, because of what you just said. I mean, in crunch time, Golden State's best five includes Andre Iguodala, and he can absolutely guard Andre Iguodala. Also, Korver's been playing some power forward this year, and that's sort of out of necessity in Atlanta because of all the offensive troubles that the Hawks have had. But he is very, very big. I believe it's Kevin Arnovitz on a recent podcast with Zach Lowe was talking about sheer size of Korver, and I will definitely co-sign that. He's a legit 6'7", 6'7 and a half, and like 220. Like, he's a big, fit guy who rebounds well and has really long arms. Like, he's, again, not this physical marvel by any means, but he was credibly defending some power forwards in the recent past. And that's just, another bit of functionality. Not really for the Warriors series necessarily, but a couple of different matchups that you could play him in. If you wanted to go small, obviously when you have a LeBron, you don't really need to go small with Korver playing the four, but it just kind of illustrates the fact that he can guard some different guys and not be exposed in a big way.
Yeah, I think I think for the Cavs, that's ideal. Like, I think you wanted to make sure you could get a guy who could defend a little bit, who could do some things well and just kind of move. Like, the issue with Dunleavy was supposed to be what Korver's going to be with the Cavs. And that's simplifying things just a bit, I think. But I think it just kind of is the situation where Dunleavy was really bad, and you get a guy who I think Korver doesn't have the back issues. I know he had the ankle injury, which coincidentally I think stemmed from Matthew Dellavedova two years in the playoffs. Like, this kind of
stuff. That is true.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a small little thing with Delly. But did that probably take away some of his movement and stuff? Yeah, but so did age. And he doesn't have the back issue like Dunleavy. And I think also, like, I don't know exactly what his future holds in terms of, you know, past this year. I don't know if he's a guy who's going to want to play into his 40s or, like, near his 40th birthday, if he's going to want to go somewhere different this summer, or if the Cavs could, you know, if he could get a bigger offer that the Cavs aren't going to be able to pay him. But I don't know how much that matters, to be honest, either.
It doesn't if you're Cleveland and you're actually trying to win the title this year. I mean, for Atlanta, that would have played into the thinking, and that's probably one of the reasons they traded him, is because they have all these young wings behind him. And, you know, paying him was not going to be a given at the end of the year, so it made some sense to deal him. But if you're Cleveland, it doesn't really matter. You're talking about this year. It's all about this year. Obviously, there's some future consideration, but that's not why you make this deal. You don't make this deal to worry about in the future. It's to make your team better right away. Obviously, Cleveland's draft assets are not exactly glowing at this point in time, but they don't really care about that, because you don't have to care when you're about to win, at least compete for another title after you just won one. So, yeah, I'm not sure about the future. Kyle does like playing basketball from everything that I can see, and he might want to play it for another year, two, three. But, you know, if they win the title this year and want to bring their band back together, then that could be a situation where you're like, hey, Kyle, here's $6 million to come back and play again. Something like that. But who knows? Your point definitely, though, is accurate, is that Cleveland doesn't need to care about that, and they probably don't.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up on kind of just grades for both teams. I also want to point out that I realize this, and I'm scrolling to make sure I get the tweet kind of at least close to being right. I believe you tweeted something about trades and about Korver, and I'm pretty sure I trolled you with a really bad offer from the Cavs that got them Cephalosha and Korver, and of course they only got Korver, but
that probably happened. I've got a few.
Here we go. 3 days ago, this is where I tweeted you. Here's the trade I put in there. And I was gonna like say a pick and said he was one if you wanted him.
I can't wait.
So the thing was, you send Mo Williams, Birdman, and Felder to Atlanta. So I got one of those right. And then going back to Cleveland because of the trade exceptions were Korver and Cephalosha. And this was this is the tweet you sent, and this is my trolling response, and I'm kind of a suicide. I'm going to take credit for this. Your tweet was, guys, I got my first the Hawks like K. Felder get away email today. This date will go down in history. And I fixed it. And I kind of didn't actually get fixed, but... Hey,
yeah,
I tried.
You kind of nailed it. Kay Felder has become a legend in Hawks circles because the Hawks quote unquote drafted him, even though they sold the pick long before it was Kay Felder. This is what Hawks fans like to do, and a lot of NBA fans like to do. They want to fixate on the player that actually went in that spot, even though the Hawks weren't going to draft Kay Felder. That pick was made by Cleveland exclusively. But yeah, as soon as Kay Felder appeared and was playing rotation minutes for a couple games there, I was already hearing it from Hawks fans. But yeah, you nailed it. It looks like, yeah. I mean, obviously Cephalosha isn't going to be going to the Cavs. Maybe he will. You never. Yeah. I don't want to rule it out.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to get traded too. But you were spot on there.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Kay Felder is also about to hit the point where he doesn't play a minute except when he goes to the Charge, because the Cavs are getting a point guard. Like the moment LeBron said it, I was like, okay, Mario Chalmers is probably going to be in the Cavs in a week or something. But
and by the way, I like Kay Felder. While we're here, I like Kay Felder. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I think actually when we recorded the season preview for our two teams, I think you actually mentioned that. That's something I kind of remember happening. And he's been really good. He looked overwhelmed the first two, three times he played. And one of them, they asked him to guard Chris Paul, and I was like, well, of course, it's Chris frickin' Paul. It's the point god.
Well, and Felder's 5'3", so yeah, of course.
He's so, NBA listed sizes are very funny because sometimes they're really inaccurate. The whole Kevin Durant isn't 7 foot thing is you know, bogus.
I have a good one for you.
Kay Felder's legit tiny.
I have a good one for you. I was reminded about it today. This is an offshoot, and I promise I'll let you wrap this thing up, but J.J. Barea is listed at 6 feet tall. J.J. Barea is, and I'm not exaggerating, no more than 5'8 and a half. I've stood next to the man before. J.J. Barea is not remotely approaching 6 feet tall. And Bob Rathman, who is the Hawks play-by-play guy, mentioned that he was, quote, and I quote, generously listed at 6 feet tall tonight. And I had a good chuckle because they were on the road, but I've stood next to Berea and that guy can't be more than 5'9". No chance.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. I'm all here for truthing the actual heights. Like, I'm here for that. But let's wrap it up on this, you know, let's just give me the grade of this deal for the Atlanta Hawks.
I'm going to give it a B minus. So, you know, better than average, didn't blow me away by any means, but I'm fairly happy with the return. There's all things we talked about, but in the end, this is Kyle Korver for 4 months, for a first round pick. And I know it's a bad first rounder, but that's more than I thought. Honestly, I thought the Korver, if he got traded, would get maybe a good set, maybe 2 second rounders would be probably what I thought it might be, or a second rounder and a small asset. So to get a first rounder, even if it's going to be a bad one, was a win in my mind. So I'll say it's a slight win. I'll go B minus.
Yeah. And for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I said this on the show that I did, kind of quickly breaking down this trade, I think it's an A plus. Like, I know he's not signed past this year. I know that I actually, someone tweet me that I was doing PR for the team because I said there was no downside, which, you know, I don't think there actually is any downside to this. If he is worse, if he's just Mike Dunleavy and that happens again, you literally didn't give up anything that I think is that valuable. Do you necessarily want to give up all your first round picks? Not really. Like, that's not great, but if you're trying to win a title and you're trying to maximize LeBron, which is what the Cavs should be doing, this is better than a 2019 first round pick. That is just, I think, factually inarguable. And I think Korver is going to fit in really well. And from every indication, he's going to be a lot better than Dunleavy and be such a useful player on this team. The Cavs are openly talking about him getting these crazy open shots, and I think they're right. And I think it's a move they had to do, because if you're going to look at that first Warriors game, one of the issues was that he was so, that team was so thin. The Warriors are maybe not going to play 10, 11 guys again in a finals matchup, per se. The Cavs probably can't get away with playing just 8 in that series. And I think Korver is going to be a guy that's going to add to your playable players and your useful players when and if that finals rematch comes.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I definitely agree with you. I would have given that an A too for Cleveland side, just because I think he is just better than Dunleavy all the way across the board. And you know, throwing. By the way, the Cavs saved money on this deal, saved luxury tax bill, which is I find that hilarious, and a lot of Hawks fans like got even madder when I mentioned that. But this actually saves Cleveland money, which is just amazing to me.
David Griffin is a very good general manager, so people that are out there like saying LeBron James with another great deal, give David Griffin some credit, man, because LeBron James is not the one every day going over the spreadsheets and doing the tax calculations and kind of weighing that side of things. He's like, get me guys that can play. David Griffin's the one delivering on that promise.
For sure. And credit to him. That was a great deal. That was a great deal for the Cavs.
Yeah. Dan Gilbert's super rich, and he probably won't even notice that $1 million is missing, but you know. Rich guy saves money. But Brad, thank you for doing this show. Appreciate us doing another crossover, and I'm sure we'll end up talking about these two teams again. But you know, hopefully your post Kyle Korver Hawks coverage gets a little bit more interesting, at least in some ways. Because I mean, change breeds kind of interesting things one way or another.
Yeah, it's already been interesting. There'll definitely be more coming, and inexplicably, the Hawks are playing well right now. So hopefully that continues as well, because it's always more fun, as I'm sure you know, to talk about the team when they're playing better.
Yeah, I mean, I do sometimes get along for the days of Deion Waiters and Earl Clark, but then I remember, okay, yeah, I don't have to talk about Earl Clark stepping in bounds as he's throwing an end-of-game out-of-bounds pass.
Oh, Earl Clark. Shout out to Earl Clark here.
Yeah, I wonder what he's doing now, actually. I have no idea.
I don't either. I'm sure playing basketball somewhere other than the United States is my guess.
Hopefully he's getting paid in China along with Jared Cunningham and Josh Smith and maybe Rajon Rondo here in the very near future.
There were two former Hawks in Cunningham and Smith there. So nice conclusion by you.
Jared Cunningham played for both teams. I believe he just scored like 69 points or something like that in a game in China. Like, I'm pretty sure he just was in the news for something crazy.
He was really mad at me one time, my first year covering the team, which I could tell you that story offline. Yeah, but yeah, he was really mad at me at one point. It was fun.
He was boys with LeBron for a minute. Like, LeBron included in him his pregame workouts and stuff, and it was like this big thing. And then like the deadline comes for his contract to be guaranteed, and it was like, all right, bye, Jared. Like, we'll talk to you later. Super unsacrimonious. And that almost happened to Jordan McRae, but that it didn't. But so make sure you follow Brad on Twitter. I believe it's at BT Roland, correct?
That is correct, sir.
Yeah, find me on Twitter at CWN Writes. Find both pods on Twitter. Just search the names. Give us 5-star rating and review on 5-star rating and reviews on iTunes, because it helps other people find the show. And both of us will be back soon. And thanks again, Brad.
Thanks.
With the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.